kicking and beating. He saw Sweeney stagger back to his feet, flashing a newly acquired toothless grin and brandishing a pair of aluminum knuckles. Coleman tried to move, but the guards held him in place as Sweeney came at him. But even as the punches fell and consciousness slipped away, a plan was forming in Coleman's mind. It would take more than this to oust him from power. This was child's play, an excuse for revenge, and revenge would come swiftly. It always did. That was Coleman's style. That was what made him great. That's why every man on death row feared him. Dr. Philip O'Brien headed out of his office toward the stairs. The hallway was absolutely silent, just as it should be. No one worked holidays at Genadyne, except for security and the diehard kids down in research. That was O'Brien's vision from the beginning. So why was he here? Why had he, head of this flourishing, feel-good company, rushed through Thanksgiving dinner, leaving his wife and two kids alone for the remainder of the weekend? O'Brien arrived at the next floor landing, pushed open the door, and beheld his answer. It was Kenneth Murkowski. Murkowski the terrible, Murkowski the ambitious, Murkowski the boy genius.
Got a call from Lincoln. There was an incident on the row.
Was our guy involved?
Big time. They said we should hold off a few days.
And?
I said no way.
O'Brien had handpicked Murkowski right out of MIT almost 18 months ago. He was the country's brightest, best, and most ambitious. He was also a showboat and publicity hound, a volatile combination, but O'Brien had decided to take the risk. Actually, he hadn't much choice. If the company was to survive, O'Brien needed some fresh blood to run the gene therapy division.
You're sure we're not pushing too hard. What did they say?
What could they say? We've got the whole U.S. government on our side. Besides, by the time we get there, things will settle down. The truth is, it'll probably make him more willing to play ball with us.
The phone rang, and Murkowski reached into his sport coat to answer his cellular. Since O'Brien wanted to check in on Freddy, he left Murkowski to his conversation and headed down the hall. A biotech company landing a government contract in gene therapy research was unheard of. So was the amount of money they were throwing around. But this was big, very big. What they had uncovered, when it was finally developed and ready for the public, would quite literally change the world. O'Brien arrived at B11. The room was 20 by 40. The right end looked like an outdoor playground with the walls painted in cartoon-style trees and hills. The ground was covered in real grass sod that had to be replaced every 6 weeks. In the far corner, a dead tree with three gnarled limbs was held in place by inch-thick cable. The other side of the room resembled a kitchen. O'Brien crossed to the park bench near the center of the room.
Freddy, where are you?
A 3.5-foot baboon scurried up over the rocks and loped toward him. O'Brien placed the briefcase on the bench and sat down. Freddy hopped up beside him and immediately began exploring the briefcase. O'Brien watched in silent amusement. The animal had joined the experiment 15 weeks ago. There had been two other primates before him. Neither had survived. Too many complications. But Freddy had pulled through, and like the mice in the earlier experiments, his behavior had dramatically changed. O'Brien reached over and probed the animal's chest, carefully studying the shaved section where there had been a small needle puncture and they had extracted the bone marrow. There had been a minor infection several weeks ago, but now it was completely healed. Freddy's response to O'Brien was instant. He released the briefcase and wrapped both of his arms around O'Brien's arm. It was an embrace. Common among females in the wild and even between males and babies, but never, never between male and male, and never with another species. There was too much fear. Yet here he was, a full-grown male embracing and nuzzling O'Brien as if they were father and son. Freddy had been embracing for almost a month now, but every time it happened, O'Brien felt his heart swell just a little. This was why they were doing what they were doing. Catherine Lyon hated Thanksgiving. For that matter, she wasn't too fond of Christmas, Easter, or the 4th of July either. It wasn't so much the holidays as the memories they brought. She sighed wearily as she ran her hand through her cropped auburn hair. It wasn't the most flattering cut for her, but she didn't care. She hadn't cared for a long, long time. She crossed to the front of the store, set the alarm, and peered back into the darkened interior. Over on the side wall, she could see the telltale glow from one of the dozen displayed computer monitors.
Let's go, Eric. I'm not telling you again.
The blue-green light was instantly extinguished, and the head of a blonde, bespectacled